coming to the end of John. How do you feel about that? Relieved? No? Do you want him to add a few more chapters? I will be. That is my next series, but I won't be starting for a while. In fact, the Matariki is our next four-week series, and then the parables. I'm going to do a couple of months on the parables. Kind of relates to the God story theme, telling God stories, and telling God's stories, because he'd love to tell parables. And then we'll move into Revelation, God willing, if he hasn't already come. The funny thing about chapter 21 of John is that it really almost didn't exist. If you read the end of chapter 20, it's very clear that John's wrapping this up. He says, and the purpose of my writing this book is that you will come to faith and believe. I mean, that's a full stop. Someone reading the book to them, is it? Your phone's out of control. What did someone say recently? They said, put your phone on flight mode so that stuff doesn't happen. Yeah, there you go. Let a teenager go and sort it out. We end up looking at them like they're serpents in our hands. We're like, what is it doing? Anyway, so, and what I think, so here's my imaginative insight into how chapter 21 came about. So John's smart. I think if you've read his gospel closely, you realize he's really clever. He's subtle. He's a brilliant writer, theologically profound. He uses simple language often, but there's so many layers to it. So he's a really deep guy. And I think he got to the end of his book. And last time I preached on chapter 20, I was kind of ending it going, I don't think any of us gets this. Right? That was the feeling I got. And I left feeling a bit flat. I'm talking about this, we are a new creation. And the shutters go down. What on earth does that mean? We are a new creation. So what? Don't feel like one. Right? It's like this concept, this really big idea. And John's mum comes along to him and says, John, I've read your book. Well done. I've got a couple of questions. I know you're smart, John. You've always been a bit too clever. I don't get it. Like, Jesus breathes on them and says, as the Father has sent me, I send you. What were they supposed to do? Forgive people. Oh, what? Just stand on a hill and say, I forgive you. And everyone's sorted. John, I'm a little confused. What am I supposed to do? If you can get to that, that'll be helpful. But more importantly, John, I'm a little worried about Peter. Because I didn't see any real conclusion between Peter and Jesus. Because the last we saw really of Peter, he was denying that he even knew Jesus. And you just left that. What happened to Peter? So John goes back to his typewriter. Didn't have a laptop in those days. Sighing to himself, you've got to obey your mum, but it doesn't always mean you want to. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he revealed himself in this way. Mum. Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. They said to him, we'll go with you. They went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Next slide. There they are, disconsolate, not sure what to do. But you know what Peter does know? He's a fisherman. He knows how to go fishing. Have you ever done that? You know you've come to a crossroads, but you don't know which direction to take. Or you know that you've come to the end of what you know, and you think there's a future, but you don't know where to go. So you go back to what you're good at, what you do know, where you're successful. You go back to those things that have given you a sense of purpose, of clarity. Peter's sitting there going, well, I got breathed on. I'm going fishing. I don't know what Jesus wants of me. I'm going fishing. And the others going, yeah, fair enough, me too. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? They answered him, no. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat. You'll find some. So they cast it. Now, they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved, John, therefore said to Peter, it is the Lord. Remember, John's always the quickest to get it. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea, as you do. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, about 100 yards off. When they got on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place. Next slide, Tobias. With fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus had made them breakfast. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish. Imagine the group of them couldn't pull this net together into the boat. But Simon Peter, when Jesus says, get me some fish, he hauls the thing aboard on his own. 153 fish, it says here, just so that you know that John was there and counted them all. This is such an interesting story, isn't it? Isn't it fun? How he's. I think, Mum, do you get that? I counted them. All right, Mum, I was there. Is this specific enough for you, Mum? And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. Now, none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. What impression do you get of Peter at this point in the story? Impulsive? Enthusiastic? Strong. Yeah, when it comes to it. Yeah, he must have been pretty brawny. Yeah, he acts what he thinks. Or maybe even before he thinks. He acts. He's an action man.
Keen to be with the Lord.
Yeah, he could have been just really hungry. Of course, they didn't know there was a charcoal fire at the time then. But yeah, that's right. He seems to be filled with this, with the words we've used, impulsion, desire to act, enthusiasm. What drives that, do you think? He finds out that's the Lord. He puts on his, so he would have been probably, when we say stripped for work, if they were wearing robes, they're not easy to fish in. So they'd strip down maybe just to a loincloth or something like that, something easy to work in. hears it's the Lord, oh, I better get dressed. I mean, this is Jesus. This one was risen from the dead. I'm not going to come running up to him in my loincloth. He throws his coat on. He's throwing himself at everything. And he comes splashing up to the shore. Jesus is standing there and there's a charcoal fire. Good thing too, he's probably cold at this point, drying himself off. And the other disciples, right, who are in the boat because Simon Peter said, let's go fishing. And they're going, thanks, Peter. We can't drag this net of fish in, but you know, you go right ahead. Leave us to this. We'll be fine, Peter. They bring the boat to shore. It's only 100 yards away, not far. And then Jesus says, though he's got fish, this is an actual photo, Jesus still says, bring me some of yours. And he says it to them, right? It says here, he said to them, bring me some of your fish. Simon Peter takes that on his shoulders as well and takes the lot of them to shore himself. Have you ever felt guilty about something you did? Like guilty and ashamed, and all you wanted to do was fix it? All you wanted to do was make it right? Do you remember the energy that builds up in you when you've got this guilt and this shame? There's something that you've done that you haven't resolved, but you really want to, and you can't? So Peter has denied Jesus 3 times. Impulsive, not just in this story, but in many other stories. The first in John, right, to declare things like, well, you're the Son of God. You have the words of life. I mean, he's not just impulsive. He's a leader too. Another story similar to this one. They see Jesus there in a boat. And Peter says, if it's you, Lord, call me out to you. At that point, what does Peter do? Steps out of the boat and walks on the water. I wonder if he thought that would happen again. Better put my coat on and I'll walk to him. Peter's denied Jesus. And as far as we know, there hasn't been a chance for Peter to really sit down with Jesus and have this out. It exists between them as a deeply unresolved issue, and it's killing him. It's killing him. He loves Jesus. He wants to be with Jesus. He wants to lead the pack for Jesus. And yet he's sitting with this lump in his gut because he denied him at the crucial moment. And he's writhing in agony with that. And when he hears it's Jesus on the shore, he thinks, I've got to take this chance. I cannot wait any longer. We have to have this out. And he throws on his coat because, as I said, it's the Lord he's going to meet, not just any old fella. He dives into the water, not even thinking. He's beyond thinking now. He's just desperate to sort this out. And he comes rushing up to Jesus, and Jesus says, well, can you bring me some fish? So he rushes back to the boat to get that sorted out. And in his energy, he lifts this net filled with fish that the group of them together couldn't do. And he brings it to Jesus. He says, well, can we talk now? And Jesus says, let's have breakfast. He must be dying. Come on, Lord. Like, let me say sorry. Let me fix this. Maybe it's just me. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Imagine again this scene. It's a simple, simple scene, isn't it? Jesus has made a charcoal fire. Do you remember the last time Peter was associated with a charcoal fire? What was that scene? Remind me, I've forgotten. Yeah, this is the same scenario, the same scene, the same context in which Peter denied Jesus. As he stood in the cold around this charcoal fire that the soldiers had made to warm themselves, there too was Peter. And John reminds us twice, Peter is standing around this charcoal fire, warming himself and denying Jesus to save himself. Three times. Can you imagine how Peter is feeling? Sitting around this charcoal fire. And the Lord looks at him. You know how the Lord can look? Do you know how the Lord can look? Or when someone looks at you and you know that they know that you have done something that you're guilty of, and they just give you that look, that knowing glance. And Jesus is tending this fire and he just looks up at Peter. Possibly puts out his hands and warms himself. And in the same context, when Peter denied Jesus, Jesus gives him a chance to affirm him. In that same place, maybe the place that Peter just plays in his mind over and over and over again. Like we do when we've said or done something we are just so ashamed of, we just play it on a loop. Thinking, if I could only have not said that, how can I take that back? If I could have just not done that. This loop playing out in our heads. And Jesus enters that moment, recreates it. Literally though, then, recreates it. Breathes a whole new spirit into that place. Where Peter denied around a fire, now Jesus is saying, you love me, right? Now what are you going to do when you next see a fire, Peter? Are you going to warm yourself? Or are you going to do what I'm doing? Are you going to feed people? When you next see a fire, Peter, or when you are next filled with a burning passion, Peter, how are you going to use that? For yourself? Are you going to warm yourself? Or are you going to use that to feed others? Jesus, isn't he a genius? He knows where Peter's at. And I reckon he's let him hang on that hook. Because if there's one thing that we know about Peter, right, he is impulsive. He's a person of the moment. And if there's one thing a person who acts in the moment needs, is some time to reflect. Some time to step back from the precipice of their impulsiveness. You can use that line if you like. And consider his actions. And see them in an entirely new light. Peter, I love that you're a leader. I love that you're first to affirm. You're the first to say that I am the Son of God. You're the first to everything. You were the only one who stepped out of the boat and walked on water. Peter, there's so much good about this fire you have. There's also a danger in it. I'd hate to think, Peter, that you used that just to warm yourself. Feed my sheep, Peter. Tend to them, Peter, if you love me, that's what you'll do. And he has this to say, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. What has he already done this morning or the night before? Let's go fishing. I'm going to do what I want to do, what I know to do, what I can do. It's what we do when we're young. He clothed himself, threw on his own coat, dived into the sea. When you're young, that's what you do, whatever you want. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. Jesus turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. The one who also had leaned back against him during supper and had said, Lord, who is it that is going to betray you? I don't know really why John included those lines. It feels a little bit like he's poking Peter in the side here. Peter's got the issue, but John's slate is clean. He was the one leaning up to Jesus saying, who would betray you, Lord? Oh, Peter. Oh, okay. Judas as well, but... And then he's just following along behind. This is a private conversation. What's the next slide? Next one. Cool. They've obviously gone for a walk. They're wandering along and Jesus is telling them these instructions. But John's there. At least we know that Jesus said these things because Peter, you know, John's in hearing distance. He's still leaning into Jesus, listening to what he's got to say. Probably a little curious himself. Is this when Peter really gets it? When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? What about him? I mean, you're laying a pretty heavy burden on me. What's he going to do? Which is the final shift, isn't it? It's the final move of the adolescent. It's the final question of the immature, really. It's not a question, really, of what am I supposed to do? It's what am I going to do compared to you? Like the person who's mature, the elder in the community, doesn't ask, what do I need to do to compare to you? Or what is my responsibility? Oh, well, I'm only going to pick it up if you pick up yours. The elder in the community says, I have responsibilities and it's my job to do them, regardless of what you do. The elder in the community doesn't ask, I'm only going to carry this burden if you carry yours. They simply say, what burden do I carry and how far do I need to take it? And the immature says, well, I'm only going to carry something if you do. I'm only going to sacrifice if you sacrifice. Why should I be the one working my blood, sweat, and tears, and you just seem to get a free ride? That doesn't seem fair. Fine, I'm not doing anything. That's the immature response. That's that when you were young, you did whatever you pleased. But when you're old, you shoulder your burdens. You even allow people to do things to you that you wouldn't do to yourself. When you're old, you just stand your place. When you're mature, when you're an elder, when you're grown up, Peter, you're going to need all of that energy just to stay put and allow people to do things to you you don't want them to do. And there's no good looking at someone else around and saying, well, I'm only going to follow you, Jesus, if they do. And Jesus said to him, if it's my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Kapow. Take that. you're going to die horribly. And if he lives forever, tough. Wow, Jesus, drop the mic. I mean, that's a heck of a thing to say, isn't it? It's not, yeah, look, he's got a hard road too. I mean, we're all going to suffer. It's a road to the cross. Don't worry, I've got bad plans for him too. It didn't say that at all. It was the opposite. It's, hey, if he lives forever, what's that to you? Do you remember that other story I mentioned when Peter, in his enthusiasm, he sees the Lord out on the water and he says, if it's you, call me out and I'll come to you. And the Lord says, come. And he steps out of the boat and he starts walking. And then what happens? He what? He doubts. Does he doubt? What does he actually do? He sees the waves. He starts looking around. He's no longer focusing on Jesus. So, well, I can walk on water. Oh, well, there's a storm. Well, maybe I can't. That's a really, what's going to happen here? And he starts to sink. And Peter's doing it again. Jesus said, follow me. Jesus said, come. And he means, focus on me, follow me, don't worry about what's going on around you. Your task as a disciple is to follow me. I think it was Mike Fitness, he said, he'd heard it from somewhere else, but if everyone focuses and follows Jesus, we all end up walking together. It's the best and only way to form a strong, committed community. Not by saying, well, I'll follow you if you do a good job, but if I follow Jesus and you follow Jesus, we'll all end up heading in the same direction, closer together. But when we start looking at the waves and take our eyes off Jesus, when we start looking at the other disciple, think, well, what about him? What about her? I mean, I'm doing so much hard work here. What is that to you? What God has planned for them. And we can conclude with these few sentences. This is the disciple who is bearing witness about these things and who has written these things, and we know that his testimony is true. Now, there are also many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose, that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. Amen. So where are you? Where are you in relationship and in relation to Jesus? So you might think you're close, but what if you're starting to look elsewhere? Peter's closer than the other disciples when he's walking on the water, but he's starting to look elsewhere. And that's tempting. Even seems sensible when you're walking on water, surrounded by waves and a storm. Some things we end up doing with Jesus don't make sense. And they only work with Jesus. So what are you looking at? Maybe for you, you too have something unresolved. Maybe some things. Maybe when I started talking about that shame, that guilt, something flashed in your mind, an unresolved thing. David was saying, listing those immoral behaviors, right? Slander. When we tear someone else down by spreading rumors, gossip also. When we lie, when we take something that's not ours. We're really good at identifying a few sins that we think are really bad that tend not to be our particular problem. Sometimes the greatest crusaders against sins are the ones who commit them themselves, and we crusade to throw the spotlight off. Oh, he can't be guilty of that. Look how much he hates that sin. So there's a truth here. which I love to see in Peter, is his energy, his angst, his guilt. It's such a good thing. Because he wants to resolve it with Jesus. If we feel that and we want to run from Jesus, we don't understand who he is. And I hope, and I'm sure it will be true if we pray this way, that if there is something unresolved in your life, a knot, that Jesus could create a scene in your life where he recreates that, where he shifts that, where he comes into that moment that you feel so much, the most ashamed about, and he says, All right. I know that you love me, and you know that I love you. What matters next is what we do next. Let's put this down. Let's leave this here. What are you going to do next? It's funny how Peter, you know, in one sense, it's probably the last conversation he wanted to have, and yet in another sense, it's the one he wanted to have most. And it's so often true with the things that we've done. It's the last thing we want to bring to Jesus. And yet at the same time, I just want to be outed. I just want Jesus to put his finger on it and say, yeah, I see that. Let's sort it out. Like going to a chiropractor or a physio when you've got a knot in your shoulders and I know what's going to happen next. And they put their thumb in it. And they go, oh, there's a knot. And what do? They go, oh, well, I'll leave it alone. They drill in with a thumb like a pneumatic drill, pounding into that knot. And it's agony and good agony. And then it's gone. And Jesus doesn't obsess at all about the denial. His concern is, okay, Peter, just turn that around. There's something really good in you. I mean, you get yourself into some serious trouble with your impulsiveness. Like, our strengths are also the greatest side of our weakness. Let's just turn that around and turn it to good, shall we? That's what we can do here. It's going to cost you. But then every decision's costly. So, that's what John meant when he said we are now a new creation. He meant that you can go from this point with a heart and a willingness to love other people no matter where you are, forgiven of anything that you've done, and sharing that same love with others. I'll finish with a final story. I was at the funeral of Alex's mum. And the story that stuck in my mind was shared about her, what she thought about when she retired. Came off the farm, kids had left home, plenty of time on her hands, and she looked around and said, well, what do retired people do? You know, I don't know what to do with my retirement. Where do I go? So she did what everyone else around her was doing. She went and had cups of tea with the other retirees and did kind of garden things, garden rambles, talked about gardens, whatever. You know. And she got to this point fairly early on and she thought, it's not doing it for me. And so what she did instead then was she turned her focus around. And she looked at all the young mums in her community, in her congregation, and she served them. For me, that's just an illustration of there's a big difference, isn't there? But though it seems subtle, between just warming ourselves and taking that same warmth and using it for hospitality. It's not rocket science, but it's difficult to do. Anyway, I'll leave it there. Anyone want to make any comments before we wrap up? Good. Oh, cool. Good. I'm glad something's useful. Hey, Marshall.
And if he hadn't loved Jesus, he wouldn't be bothered about it.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's reasonable, it's rational, etc. It's because he does love him that he's got the problem.
Absolutely.
And that's so with us too.
Yeah.
It's if you do love him, that's why you've got the problem of guilt.
That's right.
Those that feel they have no guilt, they have a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. Yes, because we love him, because we have a conscience, because we are coming alive, that's why we feel bad about some things that we do and say. If you were dead, you wouldn't feel that. That's a good sign. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, or his bread. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yes, it is. You see the story. It seems to be all about Peter, and that's his problem. He's a leader, and that's great, and he needs to express that and live that out. Jesus didn't say, I just want you to calm down, put the fire out, stop being a leader, just join the crew. He didn't say that at all. He said, if you're a leader, your focus should be on them. The story shouldn't be about you. Yeah. Graham. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes. That's good. That's great. Yes. You can see the connection in the repeated do you love me's with the repeated denials. And as I think you're bang on, you don't know what you don't know. And so you need someone outside you to introduce a new perspective, which Jesus does by slowing him down, by bringing him back into that moment and saying, well, you're really quick with your words, Peter. But remember, there's cost to this. You're really quick to get into that situation of, well, I'll die for you. But you didn't, did you, Peter? Eek. Yeah. Yeah, Hudson.
There's just one little subtlety in that, those three questions based on the language. It's not obvious in English. The first two times Jesus said, you're agape me. And Peter replied, I'm a filly, I'm a friend. Jesus was asking him to do something. Will you die for me? He's saying, well, I'm your friend. He says, will you die for me? I'm your friend. And then the third time Jesus says, are you my friend? And he says, yeah, I'm your friend. And that's what, it's like Jesus came down to his level and says, okay, at least you're not overstepping the line now. To be honest, I think that's important that we are honest about what we commit to.
Yep.
We commit to it.
Yep. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So Hudson's just saying that there is, in the language, there's five words, different words for love. We just have one word. They had five. And Jesus used the agape word when he said, do you love me, the first two times around. And Peter responded, well, I'm your friend. I filio you. And then Jesus in the third time says, well, do you really filio me? And he says, yes, I do. And whether that's suggestive of, well, Peter at least doesn't say, yeah, I'm doesn't say what he perhaps said before, I will die for you. Perhaps he's saying, well, at least I'll be your friend and I will do that much. Coming to an understanding of his limits, perhaps. Yeah, Kathy.
It's easy to be say, oh, I died for you. You know,
So I
identify with Peter's humanness, his willingness to believe, to follow, to do what the Lord wants him to do. But when we're all faced with the threat, the fight, And we don't know what we're going to do until that happens.
Yeah.
And John's faith was, I think, deeper than Peter's.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In the scene, there's a huge amount of grace, as you'd expect on Jesus' behalf. He doesn't expect us to be, he doesn't think we're demons, and he doesn't expect us to be angels. He treats us as human, with the capacity for good and for doing dumb things as well. And the scene has all of that grace attached to it, with also a much greater expectation probably of what Peter had of himself. By reinstating him, rather than going, okay, clearly you're not good enough for this, he keeps at it. He keeps him in the loop. He keeps him in the fold, and he keeps him in the role that Jesus has for him. Why? Because Jesus will underwrite it. Jesus is going to make sure this happens. I mean, we're stupid because we think our sin holds Jesus back, or that our strength is what Jesus needs. Neither of those things is true. As Paul discovered, it is in your weakness that my strength is perfected. That's what we should be leaning into. Well, what am I not good at? Maybe God will be working in that. Peter's got this impulsiveness. It's attached to his strength, his ability to lead. But until God comes alongside and gives him an ability to slow down and to think and to obey rather than to react, he's going to be always sort of tossed and turning. But God knows us, right? We're human. He knows us. He's not confused. Yes.
When Paul talks about, you know, the situation where Peter kind of backs off.
Yep. We're all going to go to heaven sinners. Peter didn't become perfect. Paul wasn't perfect, as much as people seem to almost present him as if he was. And we're all going to go to heaven sinners, people. So let that not be your obsession. Yes.
But they were
waiting.
Wasn't the first time,
wouldn't
be the last time.
No, that's right.
So what's the next step? That's a very difficult place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. To wait. To wait. Hurry up and wait. And it's quite fitting to end right there, because of course we are going into that season, 10 days of waiting on the Lord. And as much as there's direction and structure and focus given to the prayer time, that existed in the past prayer session, and it all turned totally different. Not at all what I expected to come out of what that time was. So I don't know what's going to happen in these 10 days. Isn't that the part of the point? I'm not following me. You're not following me. You're not following the elders. We're following Jesus together. That's why we invite everyone into the process. I hope that he does things we don't expect. That would mean he's God, not just what I expect.
I guess they were doing what was reasonable, as they could see it, fishing. And Jesus met them where they were doing what was reasonable.
Yep, he meets us where we are, not where we want to be. Let me bless you. Mai hoa koe e manaaki, mana koe e tiaki. Mai hoa e mia kia tia hotona mata kia koe, mana hoki koe e atawhai. Mai hoa tona kanohi e whakara kia koe, mana anō e tuku te rangamari e kia koe. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he lift his countenance upon you and bring you peace. Amen.